When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and here we are on our together. It's you and I. It's me.
I don't think we can sing any more songs. I think the songs are, we've sung so many songs, we're out of songs to sing.
No, I think that the limit does not exist. There's
no way. The limit does not exist. Speaking of, the Mean Girls movie just came out, speaking of which.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
I have no interest. I'm not going to go watch a musical.
I've heard some things. I've heard all the things from the people. I've heard that, you know, I've heard good things. I've heard bad things. I mean, I like the original film. I think that why mess with perfection?
That, you know? I was about to say the same line. Okay, I have a big problem with this, actually. Let's, guys, it's Kennedy Dynasty. Ryan's here. Here we go. First episode of 2024. Banter Town. Go on, turn it off if you don't like our episodes, and don't leave a bad review about it. Thanks. That's our little thing at the beginning.
Don't you do it.
Tune into the next episode, and it won't be like this if this is not your taste. Anyway, let's talk about this. I have a huge problem with this. I have a huge problem with gimmicks.
You're not a gimmick gal. You're not a gimmick gal.
No, and Jeffrey is all about a gimmick.
Caroline's a gimmick gal. Caroline loves a gimmick.
I think there has to be one in each relationship just to make it fun, like, and to keep you on your toes.
We all have a lot of arguments over gimmicks. You know, the big one is, for those of you not living in the South, every summer, a restaurant, a very famous Southern fast food chain called Cookout.
I hate Cookout. Jeffrey loves it.
Okay, so this is the thing. Cookout has a watermelon milkshake from, like, June to August.
Yep.
Okay, Caroline is obsessed with this milkshake.
So is Jeffrey.
On watermelon. Jeffrey's obsessed with it, Caroline. When the day it comes out, she's like, we got to go get the milkshake. And I have tried it. And it is garbage.
It's
like
foul. It's
hot garbage. As are most novelty things. Shamrock shakes, garbage.
Garbage.
McRibs, garbage.
Garbage. Actual yoga mats. Like made out of yoga mats.
Yes. I know we just mentioned three fast food things, but they are pretty gimmicky.
Okay, but do you know what's bops? A freaking double cheeseburger. Never goes out of style. It's always going to hit. It's perfect.
Vanilla milkshake.
Vanilla milkshake. Chocolate milkshake.
Yeah. Perhaps. There's a reason it's been on the menu for so long. And quite frankly, like, again, your gimmicks. I'll tell you one.
Listen, I gotta tell you first.
Oh yeah.
Oreos. Yeah. Okay, double stuff, great. I mean, obviously. But beyond that, I don't want a red velvet. I don't want a confetti. I don't want a 4th of July. I don't want Pop Rocks in my mouth. I want literally a plain Oreo. Why mess with perfection? You can't compete with perfect.
Give me an Oreo. I want at Halloween, I'm okay with them changing the icing orange, but it's essentially still an Oreo.
That's okay.
And that's fine. And that's what I want. And when companies try to get me back in the store, I will tell you, it did work with the Chick-fil-A had the pimento cheese jalapeno chicken sandwich.
I couldn't bring myself to try it. Jeffrey and one of our friends tried it on a shoot and they loved it. So
I wanted to try it. I came in, admittedly, you know, cut through 2 or 3 months after I, you know, whatever, and asked for it. And they were like, oh yeah, we don't do that anymore. I was like, all right, I've got burned too many times now. One is too many times. I've gotten burned on gimmicks. I'm never doing it again.
It's true. What have you been up to? Catch the people up.
I have a couple of things. And Allison's going to post about this. I recently did a podcast with a guy named Sam Coates. He has a podcast called Driven By. It's on Spotify. It's on all the major production sites. It's very interesting. He interviews entrepreneurs and builders. And I was on to talk about my high school and the process that we had there and the rethinking of education that's going on, not only at Crosstown, but across the country. I'm telling you, this is the future, not just like just I'm telling you all and Allison, the future of education is happening. You haven't seen it yet. And so those of you with children, like, I am pretty sure that the high schools that they're going to go to are going to be different than the high schools that currently exist and the ones that you went to. And if I have my say, they will be. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that we have it's been going around to different things. It's been announced. It's been to a few film festivals already. But of course, this 5-year-long documentary that we had made about our school, and particularly I am a feature focus in it, is out now, being shopped around. It's not on a streaming platform yet. It's still held privately and being, you know, utilized for that sort of thing. But I'm fairly certain that in the next 12 months, I will be able to come on this podcast and give you an exact place you can go to watch it. And you can see me from 2018. I was 20 pounds heavier and had more hair, which was great. I wish I was the weight I am now, but with the hair I had then.
I was just thinking your hair looks great, actually.
Yeah, that's minoxidil.
I don't know what that is, but it's working for you.
It's the chemical component of Rogaine.
Well, it looks great.
I spray it on my hair every night because awesome. I'm 30 and I refuse to go bald. So yet. And anyway, so that's really exciting. Really excited about that. That I got to see it last year several times in a couple of different venues, and we're really excited about it. It's a very good film. And so when you guys get a chance to see it, we're going to let you know. I really want you to see it. It's not about Kennedy. It's not about history, but it is about making history. I really do believe that the things that my school is working on are making history. And I think you're going to see the effects of it in the next 10 or so years. I really do. So
I do too. And I have to say, I'm so freaking proud of you. Like,
well, I appreciate it.
No, I mean, beyond. And the thing is, I'm a mother, I have children. Like what you're doing is making such a difference in these students' lives. And your day to day makes a difference in these kids' lives. There are your favorite teacher, your favorite professor, the people that pour into you day in and day out are like, stick with you. And I know there are kids that are going to be like, you know, Mr. Pryor changed my life. I have a favorite professor. Shout out if she listens, Laura Buckner. She changed my life. Like, she impacted me. She's the best. Laura Buckner, you're the best if she's listening. But there's things she said that really changed my thought process of motherhood, working, just the industry, marketing, all these kinds of things. She was really pivotal. And so I know for you, you're making differences in kids' lives, and that's the biggest impact of all. So I'm just so proud of you.
It is still fun, and it's still, and it's just like coming on here to talk with you about history and JFK. And I get all these, you know, even now 4 years later, I still get excited to talk with you about these things, because not only do we have a common interest, but also just talking about history is fun. And I think, again, your listeners are here because they like to hear about history. And so today, Allison, what are we talking about?
Talking about JFK and Hemingway. And the reason is because there's a reason behind everything, but there's an entire part of JFK Library that's completely a wing of Ernest Hemingway. And I know I get a lot of listener requests being like, hey, I'm going to the library, what should I check out, or what's in the area, or where are your top Kennedy places to visit? And it's a really neat kind of, there's like a through line of JFK and Hemingway's story. And I think they're both obviously extremely pivotal parts of American history. So they do link, and we're going to talk about
why you can actually look at Hemingway stuff in the JFK Library, because it's a fascinating little story. It's not a super in-depth, because spoiler alert, Hemingway and JFK, by the way, I think there's a little jingle there. You know, we like to do our jingles.
Wait, do it.
Duh. Hemingway and JFK. Do you like that?
Yeah.
And so when we were in Paris in October, we normally avoid all of the tourist things. So Caroline has been to France and Paris many, many times. Her father has been to Paris many, many times. So I get to have a really cool in-depth experience in France. Because they just have all these places that are old school.
Fun fact, Caroline is completely fluent in French. She's such a babe.
And so we get to travel around. And by the way, the French people treat us very nicely, because we just let her talk and they assume we're French. And so we and LR just sit there and it's like, great. But this time around, we decided that we were going to hit a tourist spot. And there's this place that is called Harry's New York Bar. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Harry's New York Bar is famously the place that claims to have invented two drinks. Three drinks, actually. The first and probably most famous is the French 75, which you probably had a French 75 if you've gone to any fancy cocktail bars, because they love it. It is essentially the rich man's Long Island iced tea. Mm-hmm. It is full of booze. They claim to have invented that. They claim to have invented the original Bloody Mary, and they claim to have invented the original sidecar. Now, you go in this place, and we got there at the right time. It was about 2 o'clock, and we sit down, and they have there. It's an American bar in Paris. It's been around since the 1910s and or 20s, I think. And it is, on the walls are pennants from all of the major colleges and universities in the United States, and like signed by all the famous people who have been there over the years. They serve one food at Harry's New York Bar. Do you know what that food is, Allison?
I don't. I know of the bar, but I do not know the food. Let me guess. Give me a hint.
You commented on a post I made about this food when we came back from France.
Oh, was it escargot?
No.
Oh, was it a hot dog?
Yes.
Ah, nailed it.
Harry's New York bar in Paris serves hot dogs. That's it. That's the food.
There is no in between. Escargot, no hot between. Dogs.
No. They serve hot dogs and they come on a plate and they bring you a cup of relish and a cup of mustard, but they will not bring you ketchup.
Good. Because so, get out with that trash on a hot dog. If you put ketchup on a hot dog, which my husband does, so he's the one exception. No.
Yeah, I love ketchup on a hot dog.
We're not
going to talk about this.
You're not okay. You're not okay in the head. Okay, continue.
Anyway, so you might be asking yourself, well, why am I telling you about a hot dog in Paris? Well, let me tell you about a hot dog in Paris. Not only did Hemingway used to hang out at this bar, Harry's New York bar, but the hot dog machine that they use to make the hot dogs is like one of those old fashioned steam tables, and it sits on the bar and you have to, and they make them to order. And the machine has been in the bar since Hemingway hung out there.
That's dope. And so
it is probably true. This statement is probably true. I am one hot dog machine separated from Ernest Hemingway.
Put that on a t-shirt. And no, make that your bio and put it on your tombstone and make it the title of your autobiography.
I actually have had a lot of runs with Hemingway because Caroline and I got engaged in Cuba. And so I was able to go to all the bars in Cuba, in Havana that he loved. Been connected, like I've just missed paths by about 60 years with Ernest Hemingway.
Are you reincarnated Ernest Hemingway?
Man, I might be. I love Hemingway. I really do. I don't like his writing, but I like him. Like I like the story.
Okay, I don't know that you can like Hemingway without liking his writing, but
see, I love Oxford. Go off, King. I love Oxford and William Faulkner, but I can't read Faulkner. It's just there's something about the writing style that just doesn't mesh for my brain. So
I understand.
Anyway. So I ate this hot dog in Paris from the same machine that Ernest Hemingway ate from.
And you cried one single tear.
And I cried one single tear.
And it hit the Frank.
And it hit the Frank. It hit the Frank. And that's that. So to talk about Hemingway is often, a lot of people, I think, have this very similar story where they've been to a place that Hemingway's been to because Hemingway went all over the place. Mm-hmm. He was prolific. In the time in which he existed, he was a superstar of the literary world. And so much so that, I mean, JFK was obsessed, not obsessed, I think is the wrong word, but JFK was enamored by Hemingway.
Heavily admired.
And so, like, the story of Ernest Hemingway and JFK is very interesting because, one, they never met. Although there was opportunity for them to meet. But the biggest connection, and this is the thing that takes us eventually to where we want to go, which is Hemingway's papers being in the JFK library, is that they were both friends with a guy named William Walton, who was a journalist and painter, and he reported on World War II with Hemingway, but also later served on Kennedy's Commission on the Fine Arts. He was their chairman. And so that's sort of the major connection between them as far as a human being is concerned. And we're going to find out later why that friendship was so important. Some other connections is that Kennedy did write an undated document. He drafted an undated document called Letter to Hemingway whenever he was younger, where he basically talked about the pressures that young people faced in military service, but also said that there is no comparable pressure on the politician to sacrifice all for the public good. And so he basically is lambasting politicians in that. And the letter itself is very interesting. It's at the Kennedy Archives at the library, and you can go and see it and look at it and all kind of good stuff. But in 1955, the biggest sort of beginning of this connection, the thing where it sort of really starts to like connect, where Hemingway and JFK connected, even though I don't think he ate a hot dog at Harry's New York bar, is that then Senator Kennedy wrote he was writing Profiles in Courage. Mm-hmm. And he came across a quote from Hemingway or a definition that was attributed to Hemingway on courage. According to Hemingway, courage is grace under pressure. He drafted to Hemingway and he said, I'm completing a book on political courage, the stories of senators who risk their careers. I'm most anxious to use the text, a definition of courage as grace under pressure, which I recall was attributed to you. And Hemingway did not get back to JFK, but his publishers did. And they couldn't verify the quote. And it wasn't until a few months later that Kennedy's editor found what this was from. And it came from a 1929 interview with a woman named Dorothy Parker, who wrote for The New Yorker. You probably have heard of Dorothy Parker before.
Absolutely.
And it was a quote from that interview. And so Kennedy was actually able to include it. And I shall read to you literally from the first chapter of Profiles in Courage, the chapter entitled Courage in Politics. Are you prepared? Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Are you standing up?
I'm sitting down.
Okay. If you're standing up, you should sit down. If you're sitting down, you should stand up. This is a book about the most admirable of human virtue, courage. Grace under pressure, Ernest Hemingway defined it. And these are the stories of the pressures experienced by 8 U.S. senators and the grace with which they endured them, the risks to their careers, the unpopularity of their courses, the defamation of their characters, and sometimes, but sadly only sometimes, the vindication of their reputations and principles. Ooh. So those are the first lines of Profiles in Courage, right? That's the book that Kennedy won a Nobel Prize for, right? Like, I don't know. What do you think about that, by the way? I love a quote. You know, I love a quotable quote.
Yep.
What do you love about, what do you think about grace under pressure? Courage is grace.
I think that's everything. If you're able to, under pressure, have grace, acceptance, love, mercy, all of the characteristics, and still hold your ground and not be a doormat, honey, you are going.
Well, that's really, again, not to get too esoteric and sophomoric about this, but that is the study of history in and of itself. Like, people mm-hmm. who get written about generally, I mean, other than the great tragedies, but like the people who get written about that we admire, the great figures, mm-hmm. generally like exhibited some form of grace under pressure. They were able to keep it together when everybody else was losing their shit.
You have to. And you also have to understand that one of the hardest things that I think people have a hard time with is understanding that everyone else in the room is human as well. So even when they're maybe hierarchical, higher ranking than you on some form of a business or something like that, you have to remember everyone's human. You have to allow human error, allow human love, human everything, and understand that human connection through, even when you're in business or you're working in, good God, politics, war, all these terrible things, then maybe it can give you a little more understanding than thinking you're the only human in the world and everyone else is just operating in a different capacity, because everyone's under the same capacity and the same pressure.
100%. And I think, you know, the reason I love quotable quotes like this is because I think when we look to the great people of history or the notable people of history, we do find a common thread, which is mm-hmm. this idea, this understanding that in times of crisis, if no one else will step up, you have to step up.
Yeah.
And that means, I mean, another one I love is this, and it's, you know, shout out to the Napoleon movie that just came out, which we can talk about later on.
I haven't seen it yet. There.
It's good. It's not great.
That's what I've heard.
But Napoleon's quote on this topic is on genius or on military genius, which could be considered courage, is the man who can do the average thing when everyone else around him is losing his mind will win. And I think that's similar, right? Grace under pressure, right? Like, if you can just do the average thing, the kind thing, the courageous thing, if you can just do the good thing, the right thing, when everybody else is losing their mind, mm-hmm. you will make yourself something. You will make of yourself something.
I mean, take it down to a group project.
Yeah.
If you're the one that at the end of the day, you have these five people, you got to make this project, you got to make it work, you got to make it happen. You're all going to get equal credit. But at the end of the day, either that's going to be an F or an A, and you're the only one that's going to do it. You got to step up and you got to do it. And you got to take it with grace yep. and be like, okay, it is what it is. And I got the same grade at the end. I'm not saying, yep. again, don't be a doormat. Don't be all these things. But there are situations where you have to step up. And if you don't, then you all fail. Like, period. Yeah. You know, so that's true.
That's true. And by the way, to just end on that, the last one I always remember, and I'm not a big fan of John Wayne as a person or his politics, but one can't deny that John Wayne was a seminal figure in American history and history, all history. His quote is, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. Mm. And, you know, I think, I think there's much to learn. When we talk about history, we don't want to use history as a prophecy for the future, but what we absolutely should use history to do is to give us lessons and to give us takeaways. And while you can't use history as, unfortunately, to all of those who think you can, you cannot use history to predict the future or even prepare yourself for the various and myriad troubles that are headed your way. Mm-hmm. What you can do is take larger things from it. You can take big things. And one of those is that the great people of history, when faced with adversity and faced with, you know, back against the wall, they said, I am going to stand, and I'm going to stand in my convictions, and I'm going to do what I believe is right. And history vindicates some of those people, and history does not vindicate some of those people, or history forgets some of those people. But, you know, hey, I mean, I hope that when those times of my life, I have the awareness, the courage to have grace under pressure, to saddle up when I'm scared, you know?
Same. One more quote. So a film I saw, which is phenomenal. It actually just got bought by Netflix, so it'll be viewable everywhere very soon. But a film I saw at Sundance called Skywalkers. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Watch it, everybody. She says during the film, our full potential is on the other side of fear. I thought that was so great because it's so true. You have full potential to do everything. And I'm not saying I'm great at doing that. I mean, there's a lot of times that I don't take that on, but there's a lot of times I have and it's worked. Mm-hmm. So like your full potential of what you can do is on the other side, and you cross over that fear and you do what's right in your convictions, like you just said, and you
know, it's
a game changer.
Yeah, it is. And not, by the way, to misconstrue or confuse Skywalker with Skinwalkers. That's a totally different thing.
What is that?
Oh, don't look it up. There's like a thing called Skinwalker Ranch, and it's like where like paranormal stuff happens and these like creatures. It's a whole thing.
Look it up. We'll all have nightmares. No, this is a phenomenal film about these two people
that
climb buildings. Skywalkers, yeah, a love story. Phenomenal.
The other thing, avoid it. Unless you like that kind of thing, which, hey. If you like that kind of thing.
If it's good in your convictions.
If you have the courage to watch it, if you have the grace under pressure.
I don't, but no. You can.
There are more than a number of videos on YouTube that you can watch about this, and they will keep you up.
I don't condone. All right, continue.
JFK, so Hemingway and Kennedy came back again together. They sort of almost crossed paths again in January of 1961, because Hemingway was one of the 168 artists that Kennedy invited to his inauguration. And actually, Hemingway kept this in his files. Like, he kept the invitation. They responded that, of course, like at this time, Hemingway was dealing with incredible amounts of mental health issues and physical ailments. And I mean, a life of alcoholism combined with, you know, very bad mental health care, which, you know, was the 50s. Yeah. He and his wife, Mary, did wish JFK success in their cultural projects and in all things. And basically, again, and Hemingway was at the Mayo Clinic at this time. So like, it was very, it wasn't good. You know, I mean, Hemingway ended his own life and sadly, but like the reason for that is kind of terrible. You know, Hemingway had been undergoing some things. But before we get to that, what I'll say is that a woman of the inaugural committee named Kay Haley made this surprise for the first family, which was a scrapbook of all the congratulatory messages. And she included the one from Hemingway, and JFK apparently was just so ecstatic. Like, he was reading through it and stopped and like read it out loud. And it was Hemingway said, watching the inauguration from Rochester, there was the happiness and the hope and the pride and how beautiful we thought Mrs. Kennedy was. And then how deeply moving the inaugural address was. Watching on the screen, I was sure our president would stand any of the heat to come as he had taken the cold of that day. Each day since I have renewed my faith and tried to understand the practical difficulties of governing, he must face as they arrive and admire the true courage he brings to them. It is a good thing to have a brave man as our president in times as tough as these for our country and our world.
What a compliment.
And noted, by the way, that this was one of the most beautiful things he had written in a while, because again, he had trouble writing. He was depressed. His health was declining. Again, years of alcoholism. And other maladies, and he was undergoing electric shock therapy to deal with his depression, and his memory and his writing abilities were failing. Like, you know, the great man was falling. I don't know if, you know, it's kind of poignant in a way.
It is.
To read that and to think about it. Because we view that day and that inauguration and that speech as so important, you know, I don't know.
This is a side note. I've never talked about this on the podcast, and I know this is getting really deep, but just because we're talking about mental health and everything, suicide has affected my family, my friend group.
Mine too.
You know, it really has. And it's very prevalent and it's very sad. And I just want you all to know, no matter what, I know this may sound like a broken record coming from some girl you don't know through your speaker, but you are loved. You are valued. There are brighter days. I'm going to put the suicide hotline number in the episode description or a description of this episode, just because if you're listening to this and you feel lost or at the end of your rope or anything like that, please reach out to somebody and speak to someone, because I'm telling you, your life is never worth giving up. It's really not. So anyway, that's just my little side.
It's very important when talking about Hemingway to discuss it, because it's very important. And Allison, on top of that, I have experienced suicide very, very
directly in close succession. And I would just add, I think that it's always important to remember that, yes, no matter how bleak or dark it feels or it seems, like there are people who will be affected by that. 100%. And they will miss you and they will love you, but they will also have to carry that with them forever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to understand that you're not alone. You know, you're not, even if it feels like it. And I think it's important to do that, you know, not to dig too deeply into that subject, no, but we all talk about Hemingway.
I'm going to put that in the description. So if you feel that way, you know someone that feels that way, you don't have a resource, you need a resource, you just want to talk to somebody, it's there for you. So,
yeah. And so on July 2nd, you know, like that was the date of Hemingway's death. So this is the interesting thing. He had been back in the United States for some time receiving treatment, but most of his stuff was at his home in Cuba, at the Finca Vigia. I think it's Finca Vigia. I don't exactly know the exact pronunciation.
Lord, I don't know.
But as you know, American relations with Cuba had deteriorated by this point, right? This is after the Bay of Pigs. And so, you know, Mary, Hemingway's widow, was really having a big problem. She couldn't get back to get his effects and to deal with his stuff. And she couldn't get there to get all of his papers and all of his books and all of the things he had written. And he hadn't been there since, I mean, he hadn't been there in years. I mean, he'd been there in 3, 4, 5 years by the time that he passed away. And obviously the relationship between the United States, Kennedy, and Cuba had reached a very low point. Mary reached out to a common friend, William Walton, who we talked about earlier in this discussion. And he spoke with Kennedy, and he convinced the administration to help Mary enter Cuba. And she was able to go down there. And what she did, part of the deal was, when she was meeting down there with Castro and the government, was she sort of had to make a deal. And her deal ended up being, and this is very interesting, and Kennedy really loved this. He thought this was amazing. He thought this was one of the best evidences of statecraft that he had ever seen. But Mary decided that she was going to, in taking the papers and the effects of Hemingway, she said she would donate the house to the people of Cuba, not to Fidel Castro.
Interesting.
And so she donated the home to the people of Cuba, who Hemingway was infatuated with, and said that this is for the people of Cuba. And Castro said, okay. Mm-hmm. And when she got back and was able to talk to Kennedy, he said, I could not have done it better myself. He said, this is incredible. And Kennedy and Mary actually, sat next to him at a dinner for Nobel Prize winners at the White House, where Frederick March performed a reading of Hemingway's unpublished works.
Oh, wow.
As a consequence of Kennedy's assassination some years later, Jackie found herself in the same exact position as Mary had. And William Walton comes back in and encouraged Mary to donate all of Hemingway's materials to the JFK Library as a thank you for their help in her retrieving his effects from Cuba. Also noting that, like, you know, Hemingway had been according to her, a fervent and profound admirer of the late president, and said that it would be very fitting. And so in 1968, she donated everything that she had in her possession to the JFK Library. And that is where it stays to this day. And that is why, even though Kennedy and Hemingway never met, all of Hemingway's writings, like his original stuff, are at the JFK Library.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
People may think it's a little obscure that there's, you know, obviously the collections of Hemingway at the JFK Library, but Jackie did a really good quote when she announced the gift of the papers in 1972. And she said that the collection would help to fulfill our hope that the library will become a center for the study of American civilization in all its aspects in these years. So I thought that was interesting that she was kind of reaching outside of presidential history alone and, like, wanted this to be a place for all of it. So I don't know. I just think that's neat. So
I think if you were to go there without the context, you might just assume that Hemingway and JFK were big pals, like that they had met each other many times, and they never ever were in the same room together. They never spoke personally. They exchanged a few letters, tangentially, but they never had that opportunity. And I think it's just fascinating, because again, you wouldn't know why his stuff is there.
I didn't when I first went
to the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, that's basically JFK and Hemingway in a nutshell. There's not much else because again, they never met. This is sort of their connection, but it seems to be a very rich connection. And I'd be fascinated to know more about that trip that Mary took to Havana. There must be some kind of a article or.
Oh, I'm sure. We probably dig deeper there. I think it's really neat. And the library does a lot with Hemingway's collection. Like when there's any kinds of dates that come up, I'm always seeing them on social media promoting it or doing new lecture series and things like that. So if you're really interested in this and you like this topic, there's a lot of resources there for Hemingway as well as JFK, obviously. So I'll put a link in the description of this episode to JFK Library, obviously, so that you can find that. Pryor, what were your sources for today? I always like to list sources.
I use the JFK Library. They have several resources on this particular topic. And if you want to know more, they have a wealth of information. I took some documents directly from their website and the National Archives, some of the notes, letters, and telegrams that they had. I think it's really is a cool place. There's lots of stuff there. Again, Hemingway has a cult of personality around him the same way that JFK does. Like there is a fascination with him. As a seminal figure in American history and even just as a style icon, for God's sake, like Hemingway and JFK were both style icons, right?
Yeah. Like, just prolific figures in American history in general. So, well, thanks, Pryor. You'll always be my history teacher.
Oh, thank you.
Are there any songs, any segments, anything we didn't hit on of our
classics?
Man,
that's the thing. The songs, I was just thinking about it. I was like, there's no PT 109 for this story. Like there isn't like,
what's a good, let's think about that. What's a good like send off, like a good,
let's see. I mean, Hemingway, Cuba, the Bay of Pigs,
Oreos, gimmicks.
Let's see.
What do we talk
about?
You
might have to cut some of this ooing and
awing.
That's okay. You're a Nashville gal. Let's see. Country music. Kenny Chesney, the boy prince of Nashville, Tennessee. He's a little older now, but he has a song called Hemingway's Whiskey.
Hemingway's Whiskey.
Which might be appropriate.
And I happen to be drinking whiskey.
You happen to be drinking whiskey. I'm sure Hemingway would have not have drank Jack, but I think that he probably would appreciate the song nonetheless.
I like to think that he would drink Jack. I like to think he wouldn't be into gimmicks and that he'd like something that's just classic. Yeah.
You can be thinking that. I think he liked his whiskey a little less sweet, but I'm not gonna delve into the aromatic and tasting notes of what is unfortunately a subpar whiskey.
Rude. All right, Pryor, let's not take 5 months to record again, okay?
We said that
last time, but this time we're not going to. Also,
it was partially me, partially you this time.
Yeah, it was a kerfluffle. But
I was busy in the fall. You're so busy.
Briefly, we send memes back and forth. We talk about that's how we communicate. That's it. Like between these catch ups, like that's literally what we do. I would like to tell you guys a crime that Ryan committed against our feed the other day.
Oh God. Okay.
I sent him a meme, or it was like a video, whatever, a reel. He hearted it.
Yeah.
Later that day, sent me the same one, aka
it was one of those days.
Nope. Aka did not watch mine, but hearted it. Don't react if you didn't watch.
I might have watched it and then
you
just
didn't. There's no way. And so he resent it, and I was like, "This is a crime." And literally, like everything, our entire relationship's a lie. And he was like, "No, it's just been a day." So I'm gonna give him grace pressure.
He's gonna get
lots of grace under pressure.
Since we recorded in August, you've had a much busier time, but I've also been very, very busy and lots of travel.
I always watch your reels and I always look at your memes. Always, no matter what.
Well, look, have some of Hemingway's whiskey and forget about all this problems.
Okay, so we'll fill you in next time. And on that note, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss when a new episode drops. I've got a really, really great one I'm working on with Anya that you guys are not going to want to miss coming up. I'm not going to tell you the topic because it's pretty cool. So, I guess I can tell you, but I'm not going to. So anyway, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss when that comes out because I know I'm not so great on dropping on like a certain day of the week. If you like the podcast, rate it 5 stars, write a positive written review. It's like tipping your waiter. It's a great thing to do for the podcasting community. If you don't like the podcast, send me an email, complain, do whatever, but please don't leave a negative review. It's okay. You just don't have to listen and know that Pryor and my podcasts They are their own brand of Kennedy Dynasty. A lot of people love them. Most people love them. Some people don't like the banter and are here for the history only. So if this was not your perfect taste, there's a lot of episodes in the catalog and a lot coming up that are different.
It's a subculture. It's a subculture within a culture. You know, we've been doing this for 4 years.
I get messages begging for Pryor. So, and I love Pryor. He is a part of this everything and people are obsessed. So if you're like one of the 1% that do not, that's totally okay. There's a lot other in the catalog. And yeah, that's all I got. Thank you, Pryor, once again. We will talk soon. And let's send out with Hemingway's whiskey. Here we go.
Hemingway's whiskey, warm, smooth, and mean. Even when it burns, it'll always finish clean. He didn't like it watered down. He took it straight up and neat. It was bad enough for him, you know it's bad enough for me. Hemingway's whiskey.
Come on and vote for Kennedy, vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up.
The Battle of Waterloo was one of the most famous turning points in world history. But what happened next? My name's David Montgomery, and I'm the host of The Siecle, a history podcast that tackles exactly that. Join me as I cover France's overlooked century in between Napoleon and World War I. The Siecle, spelled S-I-E-C-L-E, is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and can be found wherever you get podcasts.